Barrington Ram ready, 076-611.
Okay, thank you so very much, sir. And with that being said, Mr. Mayor, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the Honorable Mr. Mayor will conduct your hearing, sir. So just hold on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, sir, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, would you state your full name and agency number for the record, please?
Miguel Barrington Ram, 076-611.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing for the Honorable Board of Executive Clemency this morning in reference to a parole hearing. I'm going to introduce the board members that will conduct a hearing at this time. To the left on your screen is the Honorable Willie Canonis. In the middle is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chairman. My name is David Neal. I'll be the hearing lead today. So, Mr. Barrington Ram, we're going to go over some information about your sentencing and things like that. And then we'll get back to you and we'll do some question and answers and those sort of things, okay?
Okay, thank you.
And I will tell you that you do have some supporters in the boardroom with us today. So, some of your family members. So, at the time, at the correct time, when if they would like to speak on your behalf, they'll be allowed to go up to the podium and talk about what a wonderful person you are.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, you're 54 years old now, sir?
Yes.
Okay. And you're serving a life sentence for conspiracy to commit first degree murder, which began on January 6, 1993. You were convicted by a jury and sentenced on April 30, 1991. You were also convicted of attempted first degree murder and two counts of vainglorious or deadly assault, and those three sentences have expired. This is your second time before the board in reference to the current sentences. You became parole eligible on June 5th, 2018, and were certified for this hearing for letter parole, homeowner after discharge on April 17th, 2019. So that sound correct to that point, sir?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to go over a little bit of information on the office now, and the information I've got is coming from the pre-sentence report. So, according to this, on June 13, 1990, you and two defendants and victim were an outdoor exercise area Department of Corrections Wilmot facility, which is in Tucson. The victim was at a basketball court adjacent to a weightlifting area. You and your co-defendant Vasquez were in the weightlifting area exercising. When the co-defendant spoke to the victim and walked him over to the weight area. You had a weight bar which weighed approximately 35 pounds across your shoulders, and you were doing an exercise called a twist. The victim and your co-defendant had just passed you when you lifted the weight bar and struck the victim in the back of the head. Then the victim fell to the ground and defendant Vasquez stepped forward with the second weight bar and struck him again. The entire incident was taped on closed circuit cameras, which were focused on the preparation yard at the time of the offense. And also some correction officers witnessed it. Interviews with other inmates indicated that the victim had been giving, he was black, and he had been giving some of the inmates problems, and you did this. As a way to give entrance to or acceptance by the Mexican Mafia, and the co-defendant Vasquez hit the victim in order to back him up, to back you up. And it also indicated that the victim was an enforcer for Mexican drug deals in the North Yard. And then some of the inmates knew that the victim was going to be attacked prior to the incident. So is that the, you know, there's certain things in there that I'm not going to ask you to say yes or no to, you know, or anything else like that, but is that basically how the thing came down?
That's the way we're going to run the statement. There's a couple of different things in there that's different, but other than that, that's pretty much the gist of it. I was convicted and found guilty of it, you know. So, I mean, what they did use against you is what you brought up as to being a member of Mexican Mafia. That was never used against you in trial. That might be in pre-sentence report, but that was never used against you in trial.
That's an issue. That's one of the issues in because of prison politics and everything else. I'm not going to ask you to say yes, no, maybe, or anything about actual involvement with him. I'm just saying that's the allegation that was made by other people.
I was just saying that while it was brought up by other people in trial in the court of law, that was never brought up.
No, that was just from interviews and allegations or information given by other inmates. You went to trial, you were convicted. So basically, though, is you had the weight bar and the victim came by and you hit him with the weight bar and then your other co-defendant hit him again.
I took responsibility again in 2008 when I testified for Mr. Gaipan. In his case, he says it's been released. They approached me in 2008 that if I would like to testify on his behalf, and I did. And I pretty much answered all of the questions. I took responsibility for my actions. Relieving Mr. Gaetano of a lot of his actions. Basically, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's how I presented it in 2008. He was subsequently released. Both the inmates, Vasquez and Gaetano, have been released.
Okay. Well, why'd you hit the guy?
It wasn't for what they said in on paper. It was actually just, over a cup of coffee.
Over a cup of coffee?
Over a cup of coffee.
I think I remember your last hearing. He spilled coffee on you or threw coffee on you?
Coffee my face. He was a porter and I was in times when they knock the yard down, they feed you through the traps when the yard is on total lockdown and there's no movement. And so what they'll do at that time, I don't know if they do that today, but at that time, this is in 1990, I believe. What they would do is they would allow the kitchen workers to pass out the chops to the inmates. And at that time, they used to carry around these big jugs. And they would hand you your breakfast tray and ask you if you wanted coffee or if you wanted Kool-Aid or milk or something. And he'd get you coffee and they'd give it to me in the face. And that's pretty much what it was over. It was disrespect. I threw it in my face, burned my face, and I didn't forget about it. I chose a pretty extreme route to exact how I was feeling the day he threw the coffee in my face, for sure. I did strike him in the cage was in the head.
So let's move on past that then. I guess at the time that was happening, you were serving a 5-year, 3-month sentence for narcotic drug violations. So if you wouldn't have gotten so upset, you'd be out having a happy life, correct?
Most definitely. Okay. I should have went home 9 months ago, 32 years ago.
Okay. You did have some criminal history before you got in trouble. You got sent away for the drug violations, but... shoplifting and false info, disorderly conduct, assault, obstructing the police. That can sound pretty bad, but also in my experience in law enforcement, that could be kind of minor stuff depending on what, you know, exactly how it came down. But it's not, you know, a tremendous amount of assaults or robberies or that kind of stuff like we see a lot of. So you've had, maybe moderate discipline during the whole time you've been in, and you've had none since October of 2012, which is very commendable, and that was promoting prison contraband. And what was the contraband? That's another thing. We hear all kinds of things that, you know, it can be really, really bad, or it can be not such a big deal.
In this particular case, in 2012, I was in the State Dog program, and I made that this program on back down to Simon, Tucson. And at the time that we left here, part of the rules and stuff that they had told us, at least to the step down program, was that there was going to be single tolerance for weapons, cell phones, dirty UAs, drug use, that kind of thing. And so anyhow, I wound up getting caught with a cell phone. Now, the person that I got caught with took responsibility for the cell phone, but because the cell phone was in a common area, and because I'm the STG member, we were already advised that regardless, zero tolerance, whether you were in that common area or it was anywhere near you, you were going to be the one held responsible, and that's exactly what happened. I appealed it, I lost my appeal, and I was in that. They brought me back from Cimarron here and placed me back into the program so that I could start the program back over. So I never let, I guess the credit to them, they never took me out of the program. They just violated me because of the cell phone.
Okay.
And that's what the major ticket was for. That's promoting prison contraband, was the cell phone.
Okay, that's one of the things my experience in law enforcement was not directly with DOC and, you know, the rules and regulations that you have to live under while you're there. So I've learned a lot since I've been on the board, and the contraband, we've learned that the contraband can be a lot of different things, and that I haven't heard of that circumstance the way you're talking about, but it's kind of like having drugs in a car that you're in, and everybody in the car gets zapped for possession, no matter who they actually belong to. Similar type of deal. Well, it's good to hear that it wasn't something like... Yeah, it's good to hear it wasn't something like a weapon or drugs or, you know, those kind of things like that.
No weapons, no drugs, no dirty UAs, nothing. It was just
a cell phone. Okay, well, so it looks like you've had very good programming. And a good release plan, and it's obvious you have family support. So I'm gonna see if my fellow board members have any questions right at this moment. And
thank you.
Any questions? No. All right. The board has no questions right at this moment. Oh, Mr.
I was just making a quick review of something. Mr. Beltran, just a quick question. You have in your release plans working for a construction company?
Yes.
Is that a family relationship, or how are you connected with this company?
I have a friend that has remained in my life for pretty close to 40 years. In the 32 plus years that I've been in prison, he's still by me and supported me. He stayed in contact with me and always told me that upon my release, whenever that would be, that he would provide a job for me. And true to his word, he's done just that. I already got a letter of acceptance from his boss. He's a supervisor of Dock Construction. And I've already gotten a letter from Dock Construction and his boss also from Mr. Arasaga, stating that upon my release, that after I get a medical check and all that stuff, that I will be getting a job.
That sounds very promising. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, there's another question from the board at this time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask your family members that would like to speak on your behalf to come up one at a time to the podium, and you guys can decide who's first and...
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Leroy Arizaga, and I am his friend that he's talking about that has been with him for this whole ride that he's been here. We've been childhood friends since kids. Growing up, his mother had a drug problem and abuse problem, so he spent a lot of time with our family. Eat, stay, we basically adopted him as our family. Since then, I've been with him this whole time. I am an employee of Aqueducta Wall Systems. I've been there for the last 13 years. I'm in the number two position of 200 employees plus. And I am giving him an opportunity to come and work with us. At the same token, upon his release, however you guys accept it, my father is a deacon in the church and has accepted Miguel to come and stay with him. We have a whole bedroom that's available to him. My father's retired principal for the Phoenix School Board. He's been in the teaching all his life and has also been a community member through the church pretty much all his life. And he would have been here today to speak for Miguel, but he had a funeral to do the service to be today. But he does have a place to live. He will get the counseling that he needs through my father and through other church members that we've asked and seeked out for anger management. Miguel's asked me to find places for him to and people, because he knows that he needs some counseling coming out of here. He knows that he's going to have to gravitate to reality, and he's been institutionalized for so many years, and we know that's going to be a challenge to come out to this world. But the good thing is he has us. He has the support from us. Everything he's going to need will be from my family, along with Richard Villa here. I just ask that you take into consideration, you know, I know that he's been there 33 years on most murder sentences, or convicted sentences, life sentences of 25. But I kind of feel like he like was charged twice for the same crime. He did 14 years for the attempted murder. And then when the guy ended up passing away a year later, he gets charged for the murder. So that's an additional 25. So altogether, just for that one incident, he's already done 33 years for that one incident. You know, I just hope and maybe that he could take that into consideration, but I feel like he's been there way more than he needs to be. And if you give him a chance to be out here, I guarantee you he will not go back. I know him. I've been visiting him. His mindset is in the perfect place to be, that he needs to come out and he wants to start a family, whatever time he has life left to, you know, do this. All we ask is an opportunity. Last year we got denied, and hopefully you'll see that since then he's been, last year was a, he had said that he was struggling with fractions because in construction we'll use a tape measure. Since then, I've sent him literature on education himself on fractions, how to read a tape measure. So he's already prepared himself and ready, and now he's more comfortable, not so like afraid of the fraction area, which is real critical in our business. But now he's been studying it. I gave him literature on it. I got the literature from Mesa Evett School. Went to their construction class. They gave me a little pamphlet. I made photocopies and sent them to him, and we're ready to come home and to start a life of being a good citizen. So I just hope you take that into consideration, gentlemen.
Any questions from Mr. Commander?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Sir, just a really direct question, and let me begin by saying that I really appreciate your loyalty. Why do you believe in him?
Because I know him. I know what a good person he is. I know that he's made some mistakes. We all have. When he went into prison, he was a different person. Since then, he hasn't been in trouble at all. he doesn't have an opportunity to get in trouble. I talk to him regularly, I visit him regularly. He's a smart person, he's a good person, and I know that because I've been, if he wasn't a good person, I wouldn't stick by him this whole time. I could see it that, this guy's no good. But it's not the case. This guy will do anything for a person. You know, he's a great, take your shoes off me if you need shoes. That's the kind of person he is. And I know for the fact that he's grown up, he recognizes his mistakes that he's made. And we talk about it all the time. How much he must have changed, how much, you know. You can see on his record, he doesn't have any charges. Other than the cell phone, and that wasn't really his, but the guilt by association. Before that, look at when the last time he was even in trouble. It's been like freaking over 15 years. He's been locked up for 33 years. Imagine that. Put yourself in that situation. Going in for a 5-year sentence. Prison's hard to live in. It's very dangerous, and there's mean people, and it's, when you get a bunch of pit bulls and you put them all in a cage, and then you let them out to a yard, dogs fight. And that's basically what happened. And that's all I can say. But he was a good person.
And well, I appreciate what you've shared with the board today. It certainly helps me make an informed decision. And certainly, you look to see people get rehabilitation and move on. We also have to think of safety issues, so it's important that we gather as much information.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
I want to comment, interesting analogy about the pit bulls. I've never thought of it quite like that, but that's a good analogy. A couple of questions. So the Apodaca wall systems, drywall and steel?
Yes, we do have stud framing, drywall, stucco systems, painting, complete wall system. We do grid ceilings.
How long have they been in business?
They've been in business about 16 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I left construction back in 88. I worked for, Mark Neeson, which was, I think they're still working on a Roadrunner drywall, so.
Oh, okay, yeah, absolutely. Competitors.
Now, another thing. I learned how to be a paint major a long time ago. My uncle taught me how. And he said, I've got to remember with them, especially like with the hangers, they call it after each other and then make motion and so on. He'd say, 3 foot, 4 inches, and 3 little marks. That's all you got to know.
Thankfully, nowadays, the tape measures that they're making are a lot more identifiable. They actually put the 7/8 and the, you know, so it's, you don't have to count each line now. So they made it a lot more simpler, but it's still something you need to know anyway, so.
Yeah, I knew a pair of hangers that would do it when somebody come in, a superintendent or an inspector would come in, they'd start hollering it out that way, you know, measure the box.
Sure.
3 inches and 4 of little big marks.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Walker, follow-up question?
Yes.
So did you guys grow up together in Phoenix or in Tucson?
Mesa.
Oh, Mesa.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I think his violation is original.
He was incarcerated in Tucson.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yes.
I had it backwards.
Yes, that's where the incident took
place. So his drug violation was in Phoenix. I guess
yes.
Incorrect.
In Mesa, yes, sir.
Thank you.
I guess I should answer him, but you said something to the effect, and maybe I didn't understand what you were saying, so, but it sounded like to me you said something to the effect that he's been serving these 33 years, that should have been a 5-year sentence or something. How did that 5-year, how did you come up with that, sir?
Well, his original charge was drug charges. It was only for a 5-year sentence. When he was in Tucson, and he struck this inmate, the inmate didn't die right away. He heard they charged Michael Miguel with attempted murder, gave him 14 more years. A year later, the guy dropped dead in the yard when he was just walking. After he had already recovered, been fine, a year later he drops dead. Well, then they come back, they said, well, he dropped dead because you struck him a year and so many months ago. So now they said, now we're charging you with murder. So they already charged him with 14 years. They never took that off. And they charged him with the 25 years. So he's doing 33 years just for that one incident when he came in here for only 5 years.
question I'm asking, I should be asking him, but since you're here, you seem to be quite liberal on what we're talking about. Did he appeal that decision and did not overturn it?
No, they didn't. They basically said that our prison system has our own laws, that we can do whatever we want here. We had an attorney helping us out on this case, but they said, no, we're not dropping the 14 years. Because we asked, that's fine, can you at least drop the 14 years and only give them the 25 years, which would be a standard life sentence? They said no, they wanted to give him the whole 14 years plus the additional 25. And that's what he's in here for, 33 years for one charge. It just seems injustice, like it's double jeopardy to me.
Let me just ask one other question, and I'm getting away from that, but as it relates to your company that you associate with, do you know whether you have any other former inmates employed in that company, sir?
I'm sure we may have one or two that have been in prison, but we don't do an in-depth background check, like as far as, you know, just because construction is so hard, so much demand, that we don't have much to pick from. You know, basically if you have two hands and you can read and take measure, you got a job. But we can't get too deep into a background check, you know, so.
And the company, the part of the company that you're with, about how many employees?
We run from 200 to 250. My payroll right now is $65,000 per day, is what I'm managing and superseding.
So that's what you manage?
Yes, sir.
And that's what you would have him do. So initially, what would he start doing initially?
Initially, we're going to set him up as a framing helper. So framing and hanging, drywall hanging. Basically, what he's going to be doing is cutting the studs for the guys, moving drywall around. Basic labor. Once he starts learning all the materials, the different gauge metals, the different sizes of types of board, the different sizes of boards, once he learns that, then he'll start working up the ladder. But with me, the good thing is I will start him off at $14 an hour. Normally we start, you know, at $12. I'm going to give him a little bit more so that he can come out of his, get out of prison and be able to make some money. Some of my guys make up to $30 an hour. If he stays with me, he will develop. I'm going to put him with a good crew that's going to be aware of his not knowing nothing, that will teach him and teach him all the trade things. What I do, and my guys make great livings, and he'll be self-sufficient. In 1 year, my father's, I said, bring him to the house, let's give him 1 year here. In 1 year, I guarantee he'll have his own apartment. We have money put away for him already to buy him a vehicle. He will have, in 1 year, he should be up to probably $16 an hour. He can maintain his own apartment at that rate. My son works for my company and makes $15 an hour, has his own apartment, and he's learning to be a man. And that's what Guy's going to be doing. He's going to learn to be a man and a responsible person. And I guarantee you, I will sign my name on whatever dotted line that I'll take full responsibility for his actions. Anything he's going to do, I will make sure he's going to be with me and my family at all times.
Look, this question may sound like an unfair question, but I just like to understand what, if this board decided to listen to what we're getting into, why do you feel so confident in him? I know my distinguished colleague, Mr. Corrales, has already asked that his way, so I'm asking it my way this time. Why do you feel so confident that he would? I know you've known him all his life, your life, basically. As brothers, although you were not blood brothers, but he was kind of adopted by your family. So, but why do you feel so confident that he's going to deliver a crime-free life, sir? Why do you feel that way, sir?
I feel that way because he's already grown up. He's not a little kid no more. He's 55 years old now. All that violence and crime, that's behind him. You can see on his record, he hasn't been in trouble. He's put it behind him. He's done every single class, anything the system offers, every single one of them, he's gone through and done it. There's nothing else that he can do in that prison system that they offer that he hasn't gone through. I know Guy. I know him. He's ready to come home. He's ready to have a woman. He's ready to reunite and hopefully have a relationship with the two kids that he left here that he never got a chance to. He's ready. He's grown up. He has 33 years. If you were there 33 years and he was still getting in trouble now or a year ago or 2 years ago, you might have a case, but I don't feel that way. He hasn't been in trouble. He hasn't done, he's done everything that the prison system has to offer. So what else can we do other than be here to support him and give him an opportunity to come home?
Now, you mentioned, sir, that, you know, stop. But you mentioned, sir, the two kids that he had. Is there a relationship between he and those kids? I mean, they're not kids anymore.
They're adults, they're now. Adults, yes, know. They're adults.
So is there a relationship? Has there been a relationship?
There has been a relationship with his daughter. His son, not. His son was younger, didn't really know him. His daughter, yeah, there has been some relationships, but, you know, once he gets out here, he can give the child an opportunity. If the child feels like he wants to meet his father, we welcome it. I know Guy would love to meet his son and have an opportunity to justify his wrongdoing and why he wasn't there for him.
Where do your company do business? I mean, where do you do this construction? Any particular area that you put them in?
Yeah, right here downtown on 3rd and Pierce, you see a 30-story high-rise. The biggest building in Phoenix going up right now. My company is doing all the framing, all the drywall, all the painting, all the stucco ephes. That whole building is 30 stories. We are the first company to install panel systems on the exterior of the building, 30 stories. That's one of my buildings. I have two buildings on Tempe Town Lake. If you drive by Tempe Town Lake, you'll see another big crane with Oakland on the crane. It says Oakland Construction. That's 17 stories. My company is doing all of that work. Right next to that is another company called Trinsic. It's a big student living, humongous apartment complex. I'm involved in that complex. Right now, I'm in probably about 30 jobs.
The only reason I ask that question is, if this board decided to release him, and we don't know whether it will or not, and if the board decided to release him on home arrest, he would have that GPS thing on, and, you know, it would be kind of limited how far he could go from, and all that has to be approved in advance by the Department of Correction. We have nothing to do with that, you know. Once we make our decision, then the guest of the Department of Correction, the parole officer, and that's the reason I'm asking some of these questions, because, you know,
I have jobs all over the valley, as far as Flagstaff to Tucson. Student living in for U of A and North.
I think a parole officer would have to make a decision whether he can go up to Tucson. We would not make that decision.
I can keep him here in the valley locally. I mean, I have a lot of work everywhere.
And the same thing would be true with housing. They would investigate.
Absolutely.
To see if he could reside with his problem. You know, we don't. We may make a recommendation, we have to put down, you know, something, but at the end of the day, an investigation must take place.
Absolutely. We encourage
you
to come to the house, please inspect it. You'll see that it meets all the requirements. It's a clean, stable environment. And like I said, my father's the deacon of the church. And it's all about religion and being a good person in my father's house. It's a perfect place for a guy to go. He's going to have exactly what he needs there. Plus, it's going to benefit my father, too, because my father's have a companion there.
At how old is your father, sir?
My father is 77 years old.
Thank you so very much. I don't have any further questions, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Right. Yeah, we have this, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. I would just like to say, thank you for this opportunity.
Would you state your name, sir?
Oh, my name is Richard Romero Villa, and I'm with the family of
you for giving me this opportunity to come to you and address you for my brother. I've known him, I think, 20, almost 30, about 30 years now. And when we were younger, we were all wild, and we, you know, we did things that we might have regretted, but one thing I do know is that my faith right now in the Lord is at a good place, and mostly because of him. He started reading his Bible. He started knowing his Bible really good. I started visiting him. Every time I visit him, it's like he's a pastor in the making already. He knows his Bible from front to back. And I believe and I have faith that if you give him the opportunity, he's going to do right by his life now and serve the Lord with all his heart. That's why I want to just ask you to please just give him a chance. He's been away from our lives for a long time. And my mother, his real mother, didn't, she wasn't really a mother to him. But my mother visited him faithfully for 20 years, every weekend. She became a mother to him. And she always used to tell me, my dream is that for one day that I'll be able to hold him on my bosom. And unfortunately, she died, and that never came to pass. And she was never able to hold him as she wanted to. And on her death, on her dying bed, I told her, she told me, make sure that you stick by him and take care of him when he gets released. And I gave her my word, and I'm a man of my word, and I'm going to do what I can to take him to church every Sunday and make sure he does what's right. Like my brother here was saying, he's not a kid no more. It's time to learn that there's a life out there that he needs to work, he needs to take care of his responsibilities as a man. That's enough with the prison now. That's enough with all this being incarcerated now. And I'm asking you, as I hope a friend will ask another friend, you just please give him that opportunity to let him prove that he will make it and be an asset to the society now. Not an enemy, but an asset. And again, if I can say this one thing, please look inside your heart. Look in your heart and see that the Lord is working in his life. And there's a reason for that. I believe he's going to bring many, many people to the Lord. I believe that with all my heart because he has such a powerful testimony. And I'm asking you again, like I said, from to look in your heart and see. Maybe you can just give him a chance. That's all he needs is that one chance. I appreciate it, and thank you for your time.
Okay. Any questions? I have one question. Is the little girl your granddaughter?
That's my granddaughter, yes.
She's cute and she's very well behaved.
Yes, and I brought her up and I made her. I made her.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, is there anyone else that would like to speak on behalf of Mr. Bertrand? No victims here? Any other questions from the board this time? No? Okay, sir. I think I was correct. I said they're going to tell us how what a great person you are. They did a good job. And it is always good to have family and community support, and especially people with such conditions.
Excuse me.
Okay, we're nearing the end of the hearing. The board will be going into discussion shortly to make a determination, but before we do, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. If there's anything else you'd like to tell us, now would be the time to do it, sir.
All right, first of all, I want to say thank you for your time to each of you on the panel.
understand, probably more so than my family, that I understand the gravity of all of this. Being that I've been in a part of the system for so long. And I understand your guys' responsibility and how grave it is. Having to protect society, and also I have to protect us in here. You know, who you release and who stays. I know that's not an easy decision, and you guys have to do it every day. And I just wanted to say that I don't want to take it lightly in your guys' mind that I'm not one who hasn't taken responsibility for my actions. I have absolutely taken responsibility for my actions. You asked about if I appealed my case, and I did appeal my case. Originally, when this case transpired, I wanted to step up immediately and do the right thing. But I was advised at that time by friends and counsel that I didn't want to exhaust all my state remedies and federal remedies before I tried to help anybody out, in this case here, Mr. Gaetan. And that's exactly what I did. I exhausted all my state remedies. And then as soon as those remedies were exhausted, in 2008, again, I testified for Mr. Gaetan. And he was subsequently released because of that testimony. I took full responsibility at that time. I took responsibility back in 1990. And I take responsibility for you guys today. I'm not going to shuck and jive and say it was an accident. My friends, they're my brothers. You can tell with Mr. Villas, my brother in Christ, and Mr. Arasaga, he's just my brother. He's been in my life for 40 years, and like he said, his dad was very, very kind to me and took me in as a kid. They used the word mistake, and I understand what the word mistake means, but I don't like to use that word. I made some choices, and they were ugly, and I don't want to minimize my actions. I made some bad choices, but they were choices, and I attempted to contact the Woods family, and they never responded back to me. I've done all I can since that time until now to do everything I can to stay out of trouble. This is hard. 33 years in the joint, you're going to wind up with some tickets when it's being out of place or, something. Sometimes, like you said earlier, sometimes it sounds worse than it actually is, but unless you get a ticket for it. But I think my jacket pretty much speaks for itself. I don't have a lot of ways. I don't do drugs. I don't do alcohol. I don't drink alcohol. I haven't touched anything since 1987. I'm kind of proud of that. I went to AA. I didn't need AA for whatever reason. It was part of my court order. So I took AA. I took MA. And I took a bunch of classes in between to prepare myself for hosting this day. I got to school. I did the step down program where I participated fully without infraction. I passed the polygraph test to enter that program with questions such as, was I under orders to facilitate any illegal or illicit activity, drugs, or otherwise, assault on staff, inmates. I passed those polygraph tests. And they were pretty intense questions. Another thing that I wanted to say too is that I am extremely fortunate that I have anyone sitting in the audience there in your office. I'm absolutely blessed by that. I was talking to I only have one aunt left. All my family's died. Mother, I don't know my biological father. Mother's died. Adopted mother's died. Brothers and sisters. I'm the oldest of the boys. All my other brothers are gone. My oldest sister just passed away at 16. I'm literally in the proverbial last of the Mohicans. The last thing I wanted to say I do have faith. But I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't want it to sound cliche. you know, I know you hear that all the time. It is absolutely sincere with you. I do have a relationship with God. I want to bring it up because I don't want to sound cliche. I know you guys hear that all the time. That has gone a long ways in keeping me out of trouble, keeping perspective, getting up each morning and trying to do the right thing, and looking forward to this day. And I've tried to do everything that I can to help myself and to help them who are sitting in your guys' office today and not let them down. I think Mr. Augustana said it best, you know, had this happened a year ago, if I'd have been in trouble continuously, he'd be the last guy standing there. You know, he's got a family, he's the president of a car club, you know, he's responsible for a lot of things. He's got his own kids, one of them's autistic, so he has his own headaches. He was just here Sunday to see me, and I was talking to him, and I was telling him, here I am, 55 years old, this guy with his own kids, and here he is taking care of me. And it was, he was talking about how tired he was. And I was just, you know, it amazes me again that I have that type of support. And so because of that, I tried to do everything I can to not let them down. Me being first, I'm not trying to let myself down. I've grown up in here. I came to Georgia when I was 23 years old. And when I came to Knucklehead, I was angry at the world, I was angry at the system, I was angry at me, but like anybody else, and as a friend gets to take responsibility for his actions, it was everyone else's fault except Mr. Bill DeLance. But since then, through a lot of programming, I will say, DOC Show was trying to offer the best programming, whatever programming they offered me, it helped. I even actually been able to utilize some of that programming in my life that assisted me well in the Step Down program. Returning back, so to speak, to the scene of the crime, the crime that was brought against me in 1990, in 2012, in the Step Down program, that was the very yard they took me back to. And it was kind of weird for me, because the cell they put me in faced the same yard where that incident took place. I had to look at that every day, and that's a constant reminder for me. I don't take none of them lightly. I've never forgot Mr. Woods. He's part of my career, his family is. At least that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted the panel to understand that I am remorseful and that I am taking responsibility for my actions. I never complained, I never cried, I never hooted hollered about why me. I tried to take responsibility for my actions, and I tried to just do my time, stay strong, do my best to stay out of trouble. And I think my record shows that. I hope it does. You guys are going to be sitting right before you. And I guess that's all I'd like to say. Thank you for your guys' time.
Thanks, sir. Just a minute, if that's a question before you go into discussion. Certainly.
Okay, my question is, and I apologize for just not asking it, but you did mention that, I think we were talking about the same thing. Did you complete that step down program, sir, with the STG?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. 18 months, I completed the step down program. To enter the step down program, you have to be gang free activity for 24 months. My 24 months started in 2008, from 2008 to 2010 when I entered the program. From 2010 to November 20th to 2011, where I went from this unit where I'm at now, which is a supermax, to an open yard, which is a high medium, it's a 40 yard to Simon, Tucson. And I was there for 11 months. And I was brought back November 20th of 2012, where I re-entered the program and did a required 18 months again over. And then subsequently sent back to Tucson. So I completed that program. I've actually completed the program three times.
Okay, well, I just asked that, sir, because you have such a long, about a page and a half of thing with dealing with the STG. I just asked that, but you answered my question. Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you. Okay, sir, thank you for your statement, and the board will be going into discussion now to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves and not addressing you, so just remain silent, but you can hear the whole conversation. And when we're finished, make a determination, I'll get back with you, okay, sir?
All right, thank you.
All right, board is now in discussion. Well, Mr. Mayor Torahan is a very interesting person, quite intelligent. From what I remember last year, which was his first time on the board, his explanation for things and his presentation and attitude and effectiveness is very consistent. We see a lot of that where they change like the wind in their attitude and their statements and explanations of what happened. He does have commendable record since 1993. He's towed the line pretty good. And I agree that it's pretty rare for an inmate to not have some problems. Other inmates sometimes are jealous of somebody who doesn't get in trouble, and so they make sure they do get in trouble. But he truly seems remorseful for all the bad things he's done in his life, but for the situation with the victim in the Lincoln offense. He has very good family community support. I'm very impressed with his family, because he's more of an adopted family than his birth family. And that's commendable on both sides, because it's hard for either side to accept somebody and really put their heart into it. It sounds like he's got would have gainful employment, and with the type of employment, everything it could probably be arranged to accommodate an ankle bracelet and that type of itinerary. Very, very good program. It sounds like he understands some of his shortfalls in like fractions. That's not something to hold somebody back for. If you don't use them, you don't learn. But based on the consistency of what we've heard in the two hearings that he's been in front of the world for, and his record, his attitude, his support, and everything, I think at this time I would be in favor of a home arrest situation, but I'm going to listen to discussion from my fellow board members. Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I'll keep it short. Every case is different, but I think that sometimes when we begin to hear people who've been incarcerated, when their date for parole eligibility has come due, we don't always quite think as a board that they're ready, but it's a bit of a challenge. If we're going to see them again in 6 months or a year, to see if they stay the course and continue to develop personally. And I think we can safely transition Mr. Bartlett-Dunn to home arrest. I think he's arrived, and I think it's time for him to get a chance.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Wright.
Okay. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal, and distinguished. Listen, I think that it's always a tough decision, and very seldom we have to admit it. And although vote for someone to be released because they, once they opt there, then they are not only representing themselves and their family, but they are also representing the board and the state of Arizona. I will have to admit that I am impressed with Miguel Bunkerin. I think that he's done an outstanding job. I think that he has that family support. And if this board sees fit to release him, I'm, you know, as one board member, I'm going to be, if something goes wrong, I'm going to be looking at the family because y'all have told me how great he is and all the great things that he can do. I'm going to be looking at the family myself. I'll be honest with you because this is only the second time in recent times that he's come before this board. I think in terms of the profession itself, I think that this is a, that's not my reason whether I vote in favor or not. That's not my reason for voting. I want to say that up front. I think in as much as state of Arizona, the governor in particular, has this second chance program, this sounds like this might be an opportunity for us to see, from our perspective, whether this second chance program is going to work. Of course, he's not at at Lewis, if he was at Lewis, and he would probably be in that program itself, but being at Iman, the program is not in Iman, but it's at Lewis, but it sounds to me that this is an opportunity for us to see if it works, and I trust if this board sees fit, and I'm just going to say this, I trust that he would not let us down, because if he does, then it reflects very negative on this board, and well, a few times, sir, I'm in favor of Bunkerin, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Rice. Well, based on our discussion of everything that we've heard today and Mr. Barrow-Kiran's record and his accomplishments and his support, I am going to make a motion to grant Mr. Miguel Barrow-Kiran, ABC number 076611, to grant a and deny regular parole or actually discharge at this time.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Canales, and agreed by Dr. Wright. So, Mr. Barrow-Kiran, did you hear the decision?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'm going to explain a few things about conditions and things like that. Bunkerin is a tough situation to be on because you're going to be required to keep an itinerary and you have to submit it a week in advance. So as far as work goes, you can't be people that work in a job that bounces from place to place and they don't really know what place is going to be even day to day. That doesn't really work, but it sounds like that you can be assigned to a work site and have a regular hours to and from. You have some family members that are going to be on top of you, like even leave, make sure you follow the rules. But another thing is you have to remember, a home arrest, you're still an inmate. So you have to follow the rules more so than if you're on regular parole where you're just considered an offender that's on release. Okay, so it just means that there are going to be some very strict rules and you have to follow them to the letter. And it's kind of like in there, there's a lot of things in there that would, might be hard to understand why they can be that picky about it and everything, but as long as you're considered them, they will be. But your parole officer will explain everything very thoroughly to you, how it works, what works, you know, the whole thing. You just have to follow all the rules. So you follow all the mandatory DOC conditions and sanctions. No alcohol use. Random tests for drugs and alcohol. I don't think it'd be deported, so we don't have to worry about that. Initially, I'm going to put may not operate a motor vehicle. Now, part of that is the cars are a lot different than they were when they went in. Traffic's a lot different, and it's one of the ways that people get in trouble, not because they do wrong things, but you get too big of a hurry. If you've got that much mobility, you get too big of a hurry, you start falling down and breaking rules even though you don't need to. okay? And then your PO can kind of observe that you'll be coming back to see us again. We determine how things are going and things can be modified. And there's no contact with the victim or the family. Of course, the victim's deceased, but don't even try to contact the family, okay? That's a big no-no. I don't believe there's any restitution in there. And I'm going to partake in available programming as directed, and that's if the PO thinks that you need some kind of counseling, certain kind of training and management, he may recommend something or tell you have to do certain programs to satisfy what he thinks your needs are. And then it could be over and above, but if he says you need anger management, if what can be provided through the church and everything is sufficient, then he would accept that, okay? And do you have the address where your father lives so that...
Yes, I do.
Okay, if you can give it to me at the end, I'll put them on here so they'll have that to get started on that. So you think you're going to buy that on that?
And so.
Okay,
I'm ready for
the
challenges.
Okay.
I'm ready for the challenge.
Okay, well, I certainly hope so. And the board does take it rather personally when somebody goes out and violates our trust. And I feel that you're going to live up to it. But your family came and said such wonderful things about you that we have to blame them if you don't. So I think they really actually take the blame because they don't have any doubt that you're not going to do that you can be successful. Okay, so.
Mr. Neal, you got to put on that, I know this is not an issue, but you have to start off by paying at $65.
Oh, yeah. There is a $65 supervision fee that will start, was it 60 days after your release, okay? And that day, the PO will get with you as far as where you pay it and all that stuff. Do I have to investigate the address where you're going to go? And so it won't be like you're being released tomorrow, but it hopefully won't take more than a week or two to get all the paperwork and investigation and everything going for you, okay?
Okay.
We also recommend, and you don't have to do it, we recommend that when you go back to your house, that you just live a normal life, that you don't go bragging about the board has released you, because sometimes you don't know who your friends are and they might try to trick you before you get out. So we just suggest that. That's your decision, but we don't want to, because you're still there until you get out. So don't go back telling your friends, hey, I'm out, I'm gone, because some of them may not be your friends. So be very careful with that one, sir. That's just a suggestion, not a requirement.
Thank you.
You can tell we don't release a lot of people, so some of this stuff that takes the whole board to remember these little details and everything. But that is one of the most important ones. Some of your friends will not be friends long. You never know. Hopefully you wouldn't have that problem anyway. But, so this will end your term, sir. We wish you the best of luck. And I'm going to put down 6 months. What would be a year?
Yeah, he will come back in 6 months.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, so you'll be about 6 months to be certified to come back and in front of us, and as long as you behave, you'll be in the gallery, not up on the screen, on the TV screen. And we'll get a progress report from you and your PO and your family, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, wish the best of luck.
Thank you. As well, I'll do my best.
All right.
Can we ask the secretary to come back so we can talk to the next one? Hello?
We're here.